Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
Well, hello, everybody. This is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors. This is show number 128, and it is November 28th, 2022. I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and co-host Carrie Brown will be along with us today, possibly, because she's dealing with a family emergency, and hopefully she'll show up. If not, we will continue without her and see her next time. A brief intro to today's show. Today we have on author David Tuno, who wrote Intrepid Spirit. I think you're going to want to listen to this one. It's going to be a really good show. And David will be on at approximately 15 minutes after the hour. Now more about us. Here's where you can find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriddell.net, that's thomasriddell.net, in the blog section, and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for the Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at tomriddell56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line and we will get back to you. Special note, we can now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play the Writer's Lounge showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Reads eDiscovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike. And I also review books on both sites as well. Upcoming shows on the Writer's Lounge. On December 12, 2022, 2 weeks from tonight, we will have on the Writer's Lounge 2022 Bookshelf Awards Show. We will present the 6 books that were nominated, and we will announce the winner. The title and the author will have the honor of sitting on the Writer's Lounge top shelf for the next 12 months. The 6 nominees have been posted on our Facebook page, so go ahead and go over there and have a look and see who was nominated. And we'll also mention the six nominees in our writer's topic segment in the next segment coming up next. On December 26, 2022, normally we have a show there, but we're taking a Christmas break. And then we'll be starting back up in January of the new year with brand new books and their authors. And I hope you'll tune in to these exciting upcoming shows right here on the broadcast on the Writer's Lounge. A Writer's Topics, this is where I normally introduce Terry, and doesn't look like Terry is going to be with us, so I'm going to continue with our topic for tonight. The Writer's Topic for this week will be book reviews and our annual bookshelf awards, and the nominees will be announced in a few minutes who are in the running for the top book of the year. Over the course of the last 11 years that I have reviewed books here on the Writer's Lounge and also on my website, as well as on Readsy Discovery, Goodreads, and Amazon, I have found the experience extremely rewarding and challenging also. Authors such as myself and Terry rely on reviews to help us with the sales of our books. Therefore, when writing a review, there is responsibility and much careful thought that must be applied when writing one. A good or bad review can make or break a new author. It can make a great deal of difference to whether someone continues to sit at the keyboard or if they get up and walk away, never to return, and maybe never to return or write again. This is why I have said on many occasions, as a professional book reviewer, I will never publish a one or two star review to anyone who has published a book. I will simply decline to write a review or hand the book back and request that the author consider a rewrite or that they consult an editor. After all the time they have already put into writing, it's simply the right thing to do. I would never want to embarrass an author who has put all that time in. So anyways, now I want to get to the exciting part of this segment, the Writer's Lounge 2022 Bookshelf Awards. And here we go. The six nominated books were read and reviewed by myself within the year of 2022. To qualify, the author must be a new author or defined as publishing three or less books in the course of their writing career. There were nine books out of 24 that listed as five-star reviews, so it was a challenge to narrow that list down to six, and all of them were great reads, and I can't thank the authors enough for allowing me to escape into their stories. I've always believed that a top-shelf book should have the ability to entertain, to inspire, and lastly, it should always lead you to think about it weeks and maybe months after the last page is read. All of these nominees have done just that, and here they are in random order. The six nominees for the Writer's Lounge 2022 Bookshelf Awards are Perfectly Imperfect by Connie Howell, Painter of the Damned by Robert Sanborn, American Nomads by Nancy McLaughlin, Sunflowers Beneath the Snow by our very own Terry M. Brown, Intrepid Spirit by David Tuno, who is joining us tonight and will be with us, Black, White, and Gray All Over by Frederick Reynolds, and the winner will be announced in our next show on December 12, 2022. At that time, we will go a little more into depth of each of the books. Congrats to these authors and to all of the authors who make this show great year after year. And Terry and I are so looking forward to next year when we will do it all again. Keep writing those books, folks. And now, on to the main event, which is our guest author intro and interview. And I want to remind everybody out there, if you're listening live out there, please give us a call if you'd like to talk to David at area code 914-219-0868. Once again, that's area code 914-219-0868. And now my review of Intrepid Spirit. Lieutenant Moses Redding, a United States Navy hero, becomes embroiled in an international incident on the eve of Mideast peace talks and is soon relegated to serve as commander on Old Ironsides, the 200-year-old USS Constitution. Now, not much more than a floating museum for tour groups, Redding is trying to heal his bruised ego and to find ways to regain his stature. To complicate things further, Redding encounters a passenger on board who stirs up even deeper emotions. Dr. Miriam Hanna finds Moses Redding to have a rough personality, but she begins a reluctant flirtation and sparks soon fly between the two. Hanna is a naval historian and top aide to Vice President Virginia Mitchell, who is a point person for the peace talks. Lieutenant Redding is tasked with training the crew with how to use Constitution's antique weapons, which impresses Miriam, but who could know how important that training exercise would become as the great ship sails closer to where the terrorists are succeeding with their evil plot. A lover of history and a good entertaining fictional tale, Intrepid Spirit delivered beyond what I could have imagined. The author has a wealth of experience in many professions, including screenwriting, sailing, and acting, and he brings it all to the pages in this novel. David Tuno delivers some of the best action-packed scenes that I have ever read, an on-the-edge-of-your-seat movie in a book. I'm sure the author will continue to sail along into greater career as a novelist, and I look forward to other future works under his pen. It is obvious that he put in many hours of research to complete Intrepid Spirit, and I'm sure it will pay off very well. For all the historic and entertainment value, this is a must-read. And now it is my pleasure to welcome David Tuno to the Writer's Lounge broadcast. And I'll reach over here and pull on the door to open up the lounge to let him stroll in and sit down next to me. And David, how are you doing?
Fine, Tom. It's great to be here. And what a wonderful surprise for me to sit here and hear that I'm a nominee for Best Book of the Year, or the book is a nominee. That's really gratifying. Thank you.
Yes, I thought that you might enjoy that, and I sincerely loved your book, and I thought that it was well worth it. And I pored over many books all year long, and yours rose right to the top of those six. So congratulations with that. And I understand you have a very impressive resume, which covers a trial consultant, you were an actor, and now you're an author. What inspired you to be a novelist and to write Intrepid Spirit?
Well, the ship itself, Constitution, Old Ironsides, I'm one of those boys who built the model, okay? Back
yes.
When, junior high school probably. And I read every book that I could find on the ship, and on the period of the tall ships, the Age of Sail, the War of 1812 is central to that that era as far as military goes. So when 9/11 came along, and let's not forget 9/11,
right,
it occurred to me that this ship, which was built to do battle with the Barbary Coast pirates. And people might vaguely remember who they were. They were the Islamic terrorists, if you will, of that era. And the Islamic terrorism goes back hundreds of years. It's not a recent phenomenon. In the early 19th century, it was prominent in the Mediterranean, and these Islamic terrorists would sail as far north as Ireland and terrorize coastal communities and whatnot. It was very widespread, and there was tribute by nations paid to them to lay off their merchant vessels, and including the United States. The United States paid tribute to the pirates. And then under Thomas Jefferson, finally said, enough is enough, we're going to build a navy. And the Constitution was part of that navy to do battle with the Barbary Coast pirates. But the point is, one could say that that war never really ended. Popped up again in 9/11, and it's continuing to show itself worldwide in various incidences around the country, not just America. And I've been collecting articles about this for ever since I started writing the book to authenticate the contents of the book. So when I talk about in the book, when I talk about Islamic terrorism happening in America and in Europe and around the world, that's where it's coming from. It's coming from that research. One of the points that you mentioned about the research for the book.
Right, right. And you got your start into finally compiling all of this information into a novel. When did that start, and how was the how was it for you to start that novel, to compile all that together and to sit down and start writing that?
I went about it in a different way. This novel, Intrepid Spirit, is the novelization of my screenplay that I wrote in 2006.
Oh.
Okay, so it had an agent, it was marketed, it was on Disney's doorstep, and that's where it died. But I thought, okay, I'm going to tuck this away, and someday I'm going to turn this into a book. So I started that process, 4 years ago, and the book just came out this summer. So that's how long it took to get the novel done and with the publisher.
Very good.
So
very good.
The screenplay provided a very detailed outline for the novel, but of course I added a lot of things and changed a lot of things. So that was my process.
Right. So let's talk about Old Ironsides. How did she get her start from the beginning?
Well, as I said, she was built to fight the Barbary Coast pirates along with a couple of sister ships, the Philadelphia being one, but people wouldn't remember that one so much. That ship was, in fact, destroyed in that encounter with the Barbary Coast pirates.
Uh-huh.
But she was built in Boston, and the shipyard that she was built in still exists. So when she was refitted means overhauled, if you will, lumber replaced, planks, bad wood, whatever, made like new, it was done in the same shipyard that she was built in. So that's pretty amazing. I mean, it's got this storied history. And it's not just her history. It's the fact that there's documentation of her being haunted, which played into the book perfectly because it inspired me to make the ship a character, a silent character, if you will, but a prominent character in the book who affects the outcome of the story. She affects the character arc of the main character, Moses Redding, and the battle scenes that come, of course, during the climactic portion of the book. So the history of the ship is remarkable in many ways. She was almost destroyed, scrapped by the Navy back in the 19th century, and And she was saved miraculously, so that's just part of the history that's included in the book. So the book becomes a kind of a history lesson that I think people will enjoy, and I think they'll find it fun to see how the ship's character plays out and affects the story itself.
Just right, and you did
an element of an action adventure book that you don't normally find, that the element of magical realism.
Right, and you did a really good job of bringing that character of her alive in the book. Have you ever visited the Constitution?
Oh yes, everybody should once in their lifetime. 500,000 people visit the ship every year. It's quite an attraction, and it's the oldest vessel in the world, and certainly the oldest commissioned warship. It's still a U.S. commissioned warship, just like any of those big gray steel boats that you see in the major harbors of America, floating on, going out to sea. And sometimes to do battle. She's still a commissioned warship, which also is a key element of the story.
Uh-huh.
It gives the captain, Moses Redding, the license, if you will, that he needs to move forward to save the day. And trying not to have any spoilers, I'll stop there.
Right. Is her weaponry still intact? Is it still, the cannons and whatever else that they used back then? Is it still displayed on the ship?
Oh, yeah. The cannons are still there. Now, over the years, back in the 19th century, older cannons were swapped out for newer cannons, okay, so they don't last forever. But the cannons don't work anymore. They're rusty and whatnot. They wouldn't be safe. But a couple of the cannons were converted to salute guns. The back end of them were sort of shaved off, and a breech was installed so that a blank cartridge could be fired. So when you see Constitution out in Boston Harbor and the cannons are going off, those are salute guns.
Uh-huh.
Now, in my intrepid spirit, I allow for a couple of the other cannons to be usable for purposes of the story, so that the reader reads about how those cannons were loaded and fired way back when. Very authentic. A lot of research went into that as well.
Uh-huh. Very good, very good. David, I loved your cover also of the book. How much time did you spend on finding the right cover, and how important do you think a cover is in marketing and publishing and marketing a novel?
Well, you might say that it's more important than it should be. People do judge books by their cover. Now, this is a cover designed by my publisher. Their first attempt was not very good, and I let them know it in no uncertain terms, and I gave them some suggestions as to how they could redo it, and this is what they came up with. People can go online and see that, and I think they did a good job eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, very good. Did you have options? Did they give you options to choose from when they presented you with the cover?
No, my publishing contract calls for them to be in control of the cover. But when they didn't do it right the first time around, I made such a fuss that they had to agree with me and redo it. So I don't know how all contracts read with publishers, but that's how that's how mine read, and I've seen that at least one other time. So generally the publisher wants control of the cover, and frequently the publisher will even want control over the title.
Uh-huh.
But they apparently like the title, So I ended up with a good cover and my title. So I'm happy with that.
In talking about publishing, of course, these days we have several opportunities for first-time authors to go forward. It's self-publishing and the old traditional route. Have you given a lot of thought to that process, and do you think you would have made any changes if you were to do it again, or as you go ahead in your future writing projects, have you decided how you want to go forward?
Yeah, a lot of thought indeed. My first book, which is nonfiction, which is on the American jury system, coming from my experience as a trial consultant for a couple dozen years, was self-published. Now,
okay.
I put 16 years into that book, collecting information and toward the book, collecting articles stories about juries around the country, trying different cases and what their problems were and whatnot. And so that was a 16-year process, and I self-published. Now, I self-published because it's a niche book, right? Not that many people are interested in the American jury system.
Sure.
So pretty hard to find a publisher. So I ended up self-publishing, but I think I gave up on the process too soon. That is, I think I chose self-publishing too soon, and I would never do it again. I'm not criticizing people who do it. I'm just saying that I would never do it again.
Right.
Getting a traditional publisher is extremely hard to do, but that's the point of it. It's hard to do for a reason. Your book has to be really good.
Right.
And that's what I was shooting for.
Right. I guess you would probably you consider yourself more of a perfectionist when putting your work out there?
Absolutely. I wanted the book to be the best it could be. So for me, this was my first attempt at a novel. Now, there's lots of axioms that relate to how to write a novel, things that I had never even heard of. Points of view, how to handle point of view, staying away from passive verbs, showing rather than telling, and stuff like that, that I learned from the editors that I hired. And I hired several editors, and I looked for the highest priced editors I could find. I poured a lot of money into that part of the process so that this book would be as good as it could be.
Are you satisfied with the sales to this point?
I don't even know what they are yet, because my publisher pays on a quarterly basis with a one quarter delay. So the book just came out in July, so I won't know anything for some time.
Okay. Let's get back to that other book that you're talking about, the Fixing the Engine of Justice. What are your thoughts on picking jurors? Do we do enough to get the best jurors, or should we do more?
Well, getting the best jurors is a scientific process, actually. It's using social science research to determine what kinds of questions to ask jurors so that their biases, if any, will be revealed. And what kind of demographic profiles exist within the jury pool for you to choose from to benefit your side of the case? It's a very scientific process. It's the science was developed to replace what lawyers previously used, which was more intuition.
Right.
Not that intuition isn't valuable, but it doesn't replace science.
Right. So now what comes to my mind is the O.J. Simpson trial. And I know that you probably sat in on a pretty good amount of trials during your day. What are your thoughts on that specific trial with O.J. Simpson? Do you think that the jury pool was appropriate? Do you think they could have done better, or what do you think?
Well, interesting that you would mention that trial in connection with the book, because that trial was the genesis of the book. It was the motivation to write the book.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I state that right at the outset, that there's this trial that took place many years ago. Many of us still remember it. And it was, in my opinion, an example of an injustice. An injustice because the jury did not consider the evidence appropriately.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so for example, one juror equated blood type. You know, everybody knows what blood type is, A, AB, etc., with DNA. Thought they were the same thing. Okay, so that's when I started writing that book, and I started it as an article, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And yes, I was I was tuned in to that trial, absolutely. I was a television commentator for KABC News in LA for the last week of the trial.
Wow. Wow, that's
did the talk show circuit and whatnot on all of the networks, but it was a big disappointment. But it's only one of many, and that's what prompted the book.
Right, very good. And I had no clue that the O.J. Simpson trial was connected to your book. It was just one of those things in history that I remember being a criminal justice student during that time when it was amazing that I was studying criminal justice when that actually happened. And they canceled class on the day that OJ took the ride in the vehicle down the highway. So
the white Bronco.
I will never forget that.
Every student of criminal justice and every law student, in my opinion, should read Fixing the Engine of Justice.
Yes, and I think at some point with all my busy activities around here with reading books and reviewing books, I will find time to pick that up. I find that very fascinating. And congratulations.
Give me a mailing address. I think I've still got some here. I'll shoot one off to you.
Yeah, it sounds good. We'll contact after the show. But getting back to the screenwriting part of what you were talking about, you talked a little bit about that. What are your thoughts as to, now that you've done a screenplay and also written a novel, do you see yourself going back writing another screenplay or doing a novel? And which one do you prefer now that you've gotten your feet wet in both of them?
Well, actually, I've written a couple of screenplays, but I think my next writing project will actually be to go back to the screenplay that Intrepid Spirit is based on and rewrite it so that it matches the book a little better. The process of writing a screenplay is a lot of fun. But it's not as challenging as writing a novel.
Oh,
there's a lot of things that an author cannot do when he's writing a screenplay, when he or she is writing a screenplay. A lot of things that are left to the actor or the director or any number of other people. So you're not painting pictures with a screenplay like you are with a novel, which is a fun thing to do, you get to be, you get to infuse a novel with some literary qualities. You don't get to do that with a screenplay.
Right.
You're just outlining a story, but it goes fast. It's fun to do, but I liked it as it turns out, because it's a great outline for a novel, where a novelist would normally sit down and outline a story. I'm going to do this in chapter one, and this is going to be chapter two, and do some kind of a structure. The screenplay sort of takes care of that for you. It doesn't write your novel for you, but it takes care of the story. It lays out the story for you to fill in the meat of it in the form of a novel.
Uh-huh.
So whenever I write a novel in the future, I will probably first write it as a screenplay.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. That's interesting. We've had screenwriters here on the show. In fact, on our last show, we had Rob Sanborn. I'm not sure if you recognize that name, but
that's a familiar name, but I can't place it.
Yeah, he's a screenwriter and also has worked producing his first couple of novels, done a wonderful job. We've had him on a couple times here. So it was very interesting listening to him talk and talking similarly to how you just explained it and the differences between a novel and a screenplay. When you sit down to write your novel, Intrepid Spirit, where do you go to write? What's your favorite place? Some people like public places. Some people like private. What's your preference?
Right here where I am right now, in my home office.
Right.
Sitting in front of my computer with my screenplay opened in a three-ring binder next to me.
Wow. What do you?
I've got a window to look out when I want to see the sunset, which I'm looking at right now. And this is a very comfortable place for me. I live in a very peaceful place, and for me, that's important. I live in the country. There are no sounds outside. There's no traffic. There's no nothing. So being at peace is something that is important to me, especially when I'm trying to write.
Right. And then do you write with music, or do you leave music off? You just
No,
quiet.
It's dead quiet.
Very
but
good.
I get up a lot. I walk around. I'm always writing the thing when I'm doing something else. I'll have an outside project to do. Maybe it's mowing the lawn. Who knows? But I'm writing in my head when I'm doing that. And then I come back and I pound out, another paragraph or a page or whatever it is.
Yeah. You know where I do my writing a lot of times is I'll be in bed sleeping, or I'll be falling off to sleep, and I'll do it in my head like you were just talking. Play around in there, and like a movie is rolling in my head, and it's really fun to do that and get up the next morning and write it all down on the page. So
same here, Oney. I get up right away because I'm afraid I'll forget it in the morning. So I'll get up, punch up the computer and jot down a note, or I'll write a note or something to memorialize what I just thought of so that I don't lose it.
And that happens at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, right?
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't
matter. It's more important to get the note down.
Right. And there's another profession that you've been involved with, and that would be your acting career. What did you act in?
Let's see. I was a SAG actor. Used to be a TV series with Alec Baldwin and a couple of other people. What the heck is the name of that series that was shot? It was in Oregon doing an episode. I'm going to think of it when I'm not trying to. One of those old dramas like Dallas and what, you know, when that used to be a trend in the television.
Yes.
Those kind of dramas. I can't think of it. Anyway, I was in that. I was in a TV pilot called The Yeagers that didn't make it into a series. And I did some TV commercials. I did a lot of stage acting in Portland, and came to LA and got the lead in a very low budget film. Let's see, that was called, that's skipping my mind too. That's a terrible thing. Old age is a terrible thing. Get old.
Yes.
Let's see. Anyway, a cops and robbers kind of a thing. I had the lead in that. But I moved on from that. It wasn't really very rewarding. I don't miss it.
Yeah, much like writing a novel, whereas when you're sitting there and it's so easy because you've just got your keyboard and a computer in front of you, to actually get into the mindset of a character and sometimes to become that character. I would imagine that being an actor, you have to fall in the character. Did you have any problem doing that? Was it easy for you to do that? And of course, then you got to remember your lines, right?
Well, remembering the lines is kind of the easy part. Oh, and by the way, that movie was called Dead Giveaway. There, I'm looking at the poster.
Great.
On my website. Now, memorizing lines, I guess some people have a problem with that. That was never a problem for me. I think stage actors that have to memorize so many lines get in practice a lot better than movie actors who only have to remember a few lines at a time, and then there's a break and they're going to do the next scene the next day. But I also took a lot of classes in acting, method acting, which people have become familiar with that term. It goes back to the late 40s when that got its start. Took classes in LA by professional schools. And I have a bachelor's degree in theater, so that's where that got started.
And do actors ever use teleprompters? I think probably they're more prevalent now.
Nah.
Than, no?
Although I understand Marlon Brando had to have his lines on a cheat sheet in front of, off camera. And you can sometimes, knowing that, you can sometimes see that he's reading his lines when he's speaking in movies like The Godfather.
Right.
He had a cue card.
You might see his eyes shift or whatever to the
side. That's right. Yeah.
Right.
Once you know that he's reading lines frequently, you can see him do it.
Uh-huh. And then broadcaster, I'm sure you use teleprompters quite a bit for news broadcasting.
No, for the news show that I did when I was on the radio, I had a radio news show in Oregon, doing the news about every half hour, doing the music breaks, that sort of thing for the better part of the day. No teleprompter, and no teleprompter for TV commercials. You memorize the lines, but
right.
For the news, I would have it in front of me. Nobody's looking at me. I would have my copy in front of me. Totally different process. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, what's your future endeavors as far as writing a novel? Is there another possible Ironsides novel coming? Or how do you see that story? Is that story ended, or do you think it might continue?
I think the Ironsides component to it has to end. I don't see another way to work the ship into a story, but I really like the idea of the continuing adventures of Moses Redding and Dr. Miriam Hanna, because I think they make a great couple. And searching for a story that I can build around those two characters. I really like those two, and and they, you know, they have their different personalities, and it's an interesting love story, I think, and I'd like to plug them into another story. I don't have one right now. I do have another screenplay that I might turn into a novel, but also I have some other novel ideas that there are just in the note form. But so I really don't know what the next project's going to be, other than, like I said before, probably rewriting the screenplay to make it match up to the novel better. The novel represents an improvement on the screenplay in terms of the story itself.
Yes, and I do remember that your characters seem to have a pretty good chemistry work in there. So I'm sort of in tune to what you're saying about continuing with their drama, if there is any room for that. I think that would be fun to explore. And like I say,
I agree. It's a lot of action adventure novels are built around a character, and off he goes on to another adventure, like a Jack Reacher type of guy. But in this, with these two characters, we've got a lot more depth than a Jack Reacher type character. The Moses Redding characters and Dr. Miriam Hanna are three-dimensional characters, and they are explored more deeply in the novel, as well as a lot of other characters. I mean, I do a lot of character building in the story, even to characters that are three or four levels down the ladder in the cast, so to speak. But I really wish something would come to me for those two characters, because they're fun to deal with. There's a lot of humor between them, and I like to write humor, and not too many action adventure novels have a lot of humor in them, so I did want to make it different on that in that respect, and I'd love to do it again. Somebody's got a good idea for a story around those two characters, pop it to me. Let's get going.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Yeah. And it's really fun, David, when the characters finally kind of, they end up talking to you when you least expect it during your day, telling you it must go on. You've got to continue. That's happened with me several times with some of my novels or some of my story ideas that come to mind, that they kind of push you into getting back down and sitting in front of the keyboard. And it's really the magic of what it's like to be an author and to be involved in the writing process. It's really, really cool when that happens. And really looking forward to hopefully hearing more from those characters. And now let's talk about what a lot of authors on the program have talked about, and they either like it or they hate it, and that would be the good and the bad reviews. Do you spend a lot of time looking at the reviews, and what do you think about reviews? How does it impact you as a person and as a writer?
Well, I do spend time looking at them. I haven't had any bad reviews, so knock on wood, but if I did have one, yeah, I would take it personally. It would be hard to forget about it. But I know I've got a good book here. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but it's going to appeal to a lot of people. So the satisfaction that I've gotten from the great reviews that I've had to this point, many of which can be read on the website, davidtuno.com, is going to keep me, it's very satisfying, and it affirms what I believe about the book itself. Of course, I'm prejudiced, but when you get an independent person praising the book, that lasts. It's very gratifying. So far, so good on that
right.
score.
Right. And then like you had said also about the publisher and making sure that you had as close to perfection as you could possibly get in hunting out and finding the right publisher for your book means a lot too, because they're not going to let something go to press that's going to shine the light negatively on either you as the author or them as the publisher. So you've got that going for you too. And then, of course, you know, some of these novels take off really quick and then die out, or some of them just kind of crawl along and 2 or 3 or 4 years later, they're still going. And that's the beauty of what we do as writers and authors, is to, you know, keep an eye on what our baby, because basically that's what it is, what our baby's doing out there. And if it gets some good thumbs up, that's great. And then it continues, and usually the author is on to another project or whatever, and it helps to have that as sort of a base or foundation going forward. So anyways, you mentioned a website, and I used to be a website designer. Did you have issues with your website? How did you go about putting a website together specific for being an author?
I hired a pro who had done an author site before, but I made sure that I first researched author websites to know what components it should have, what pages it should have, what features it should have. So I hired a designer. I think it came out pretty good, and he put everything in there that it needed to have. And a website is important for a book. I've got a different website for the jury book, and that's Tuno.com. And this one's DavidTuno.com. So two different websites, but DavidTuno.com is for Intrepid Spirit. And you want to keep it simple, you know, attractive but simple and functional. And it's to do it right is not cheap. So if you're looking to, you know, do a bargain basement website, I'd advise it against it. Spend the money, do it right, because you're only going to have one shot at this.
Right, right. Yep, that's what I would say too. And Fixing the Engine of Justice, is that out in digital or is it just in print?
No, there's a Kindle version of that. There's an electronic version. It's in paperback and hardback. So when you, for example, if you're on Amazon and you search David Tuno books, you're going to get both Intrepid Spirit and Fixing the Engine of Justice.
Great. So David, we're reaching near the end of the show here. We got just a little more than 6 minutes left, and as we usually do, this would be your Oscar moment if it were to be. Any parting words of advice to aspiring authors, and would you like to thank anyone out there for the successes you've had in life so far?
Well, I made note of something you said in your intro, which I think is extremely important for any author, particularly new authors. And that is that you look for stories. You judge a book, I think it's fair to say, by how memorable it is weeks after you've read it. And that was a goal of mine in writing Intrepid Spirit. I read a lot of action adventure novels by famous authors. I won't name them because I don't want to be critical, but authors that everybody knows. And a few days later, I can't name the main character. I don't remember the title of the book. Most of the story I can't remember. It doesn't stick with me. So I wanted a story, and I hope Intrepid Spirit is that for other people, for your readers, a story that sticks with you, characters that stick with you, long after you've closed the book. So my recommendation for any author to write for that kind of effect. And that's
right.
Why this action-adventure novel has a lot of other features in it. More well-developed characters, other elements of humor and romance and, in this case, magical realism that makes the book more memorable. So for what it's worth, that's I look for the same thing in a book that you do.
Right, and also the idea that it's actually – you know, history-based, and you're actually talking about something
true.
That
true.
Is part of our history. And historical fiction has always been a favorite of mine to read and to now I'm writing. And it's great to be able to connect with history. And as I get older, I don't know about you, David, but I find myself more intrigued and more interested in reading about our nation's history, because I think that's extremely important. And sometimes
oh,
I think,
yes.
You know,
yeah, I've just read a couple of nonfiction books on the Revolutionary War. Both are excellent, by excellent authors, very important part of our history. And yes, it's fascinating, and it's more rewarding than reading a mediocre novel, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And who would you like to thank out there for your successes?
Well, I've got a wife that's very very supportive. She's also a writer. So I'd like to thank her. My wife's name is Donna. And I've got professors from when I was in college. One favorite professor, Dr. Cherugino, who's a character in this book, Intrepid Spirit, who's passed away, unfortunately, but people like that stayed with me. My drama teacher, even in high school and college. So just a couple off the top of my head.
Very good. And David, it's been a pleasure having you on the Writer's Lounge. And where can we find you again? Give us that website address.
Well, first of all, the pleasure is all mine, and thank you for the invitation. The website for Intrepid Spirit is davidtuno.com, and Tuno is spelled with two N's. There's a contact page, contact feature on that website so that people can get a hold of me, give me their reactions, or they can actually email me, david@tuno.com. So either way, david@tuno.com or the contact feature on the website, davidtuno.com. Love to hear from you, from anybody who's interested in the book, maybe they've read it or want to know more about it or the experience of writing it. And I hope they'll, I thank you for spreading the word about the book. I hope people will pick it up and go to Amazon and write a review.
Very good. Thank you, David. And I will be checking in with you at some other point and get back to you. And thank you again for being on the Writer's Lounge.
It's been a lot of fun, Tom. Thanks for the invitation again. Good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you. And there goes David Tuno again. His book is Intrepid Spirit, and you can find him there in the at your favorite bookstore, I'm sure, and you will find that book there too. So next time, December 12th, the Writer's Lounge 2022 Bookshelf Awards Show, we will present the six books that were nominated, and we will announce the winner. The title and the author will have the honor of sitting on the Writer's Lounge top shelf for the next 12 months. The six nominees will be posted on our Facebook page, and they will be there. I hope you will get over there to take a look. And until then, Terry and I will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen in the eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book. about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make